What's Up ABQ is a proud member of the Barillas Podcasters Guild.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is season three
of What's Up ABQ. And welcome back to another episode of What's Up ABQ. I am Ryan.
And I am Chris.
And today we have with us...
I'm Ann O'Neill, co-owner of Sidetrack Brewing.
And Dan Herr, other co-owner of Sidetrack Brewing.
Ooh, welcome to the show. Yes. Also, thank you for the beer.
Yes.
Now we're going to talk very good about you for sure. We'll throw away the other questions we had.
It's only the fluff questions now.
Right, okay.
Good. That was the deal.
I'm so excited to have you guys on the show. I've been wanting to have you guys on for a while, and you guys have become my new place to go when I'm going out for a beer, when it's safe to do so, and you guys have been wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate that, and glad to have you.
Yeah.
I have yet to go. I'm excited to someday. I hope. No, I'm just kidding. I was actually there the first day that you guys
were.
You know, that first day was quite a blur, but I believe you were there.
I remember you were there because Dan said to me, "Do you know who that is?" And it was you and Billy. And he was like, "They're 10 drink minimum." I was like, "I don't know who that is." And then I started listening to you guys after that. Yeah. But yeah.
So you guys, first of all, this wasn't like, you know, you guys didn't set out in life to become brewers, correct?
That's correct.
So what is like your chosen profession?
So I still a practicing dietitian. That's what I do in my other life.
And I practiced architecture for 25 years. We kind of started talking about Sidetrack.
So how did that all happen?
It all happened. We bought the building that Sidetrack is in, Ann and me, along with another couple of partners. And we bought that in 2012. At the time we bought it, the really only sure thing was that we were going to have our architectural firm there. Soon after, we started doing renovations on the building, Pilar from Zendo approached us and asked if they could put a coffee shop in there. And we hadn't really considered anything like that, but we thought, well, that's an interesting idea. And they were very persistent about it. And so we took them on as tenants. And at that time, the neighborhood was maybe, you know, not quite as friendly to businesses as it might be right now. And so we were sort of wondering if it was a good idea or how it was going to work. So as we're renovating the building, you know, Zendo got established, and that just caused us to think, you know, a brewery had been in the back of my mind for several years. Marvel had started out and other places in town, and Ann bought me a homebrew kit years and years ago. And so it was something that was just, you know, a fantasy of mine.
Was it Mr. Beer?
It was very close. It might have preceded Mr. Beer.
That would have been amazing.
It would have been.
The idea just slowly grew out of this, for one thing, out of this desire that I had for a while to pursue the brewing aspect of it. But on the other hand, we recognized the fact that we could plug into this neighborhood that was kind of slowly coming back to life. And the more activity that we could foster and the more things that we could breathe into that burgeoning neighborhood, the better things were going to be. And so it all just kind of came together as this sort of big project. I don't know. It's a tiny little place, but there's a lot of thought that went into it.
Yeah. When I first moved to Albuquerque, you didn't go past Gold, really.
Yeah.
When you went downtown, like you went to Burt's and you went to Atomic, and if you valued your life, you didn't really go past Gold.
Well, yeah, the neighborhood has changed a lot. And we, you know, maybe we're taking on a little too much credit, but I think that what we did down there has made a very big difference in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Some of it's coincidental, some of it's timing, but you know, now that we've got Sidetrack and we've got Zendo, and we've got the HomeWise building, just did a major renovation on the Orpheum building. Yeah. That was really, you know, a sort of a downtrodden property. They put a lot of money into that and did a nice renovation. So now we're going to kind of ignore COVID, but there's all the activity from the HomeWise people that's happening over there now. And then there's another office that was renovated right on the corner of Cole and Second Street. That's got real estate developers, and it's got software developers in there. And Geltmore. We've got the Sanitary Tortilla Factory that has renovated and has 15 artist studios in there, and an art gallery and a couple of sign offs. And we've got the Turquoise Museum. We've just got so much of an injection of this kind of really wonderful mix of activity that's down there. And everybody's contributed, but I like to kind of take a little credit and say we were the first spark that went off down there.
You know, from what you're describing, you've seen the community kind of go from to, okay, like, you know, this is a neighborhood, a community, a good place to be. What do you think makes for a good community?
I think the primary thing that makes for a good community, one of the primary things is to have activity that people can participate in throughout the course of the day and throughout the course of day and night. The mix of the people that are in your neighborhood informs what sort of activity you're going to have in that neighborhood. And so we've got this great mix of, you know, small retail, office, and, you know, literally with the Turquoise Museum, we've got this sort of more of an institutional component that comes in there. The artist studios, we've just got this really rich mix that just happened to come together there in that little two block area.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think, like, you know, in answer to Ryan's question too, like, what makes it good for a good community? Well, a place to gather. Where do people gather? They gather at your place.
Yeah. So whether it's in the morning at Zendo or right, exactly, in the afternoon, evening at our place, right. But it is. It's a place where you can meet somebody. You can have a beer. You can have a coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. The pub aspect is really one of the fundamental things that we wanted to hold to at Sidetrack, and, you know, to the extent that we don't have televisions, and we've got, you know, a smaller, more of an intimate space, and some of that is just in a factor of what that place is and what we had to work with. But a lot of it also is that idea of community and being able to have a place where you can come together and talk and interact with other people in the community.
You know, and I totally get that. You know, Chris was saying, you know, he was there on day one. You know, he's kind of made it his place. That's where he goes. When he started describing Sidetrack that way to me when we were talking, I was able to sense like how much that gear place means to him. I had a place when I lived out in the Midwest and I was there day one, you know, I get that. And you're able to build that community. So where, you know, you come in and it's just a place that you feel at home, you can relax. It's where you love to be.
Yeah.
We're happy that we've been able to be that place and that it's been successful enough that we can continue to do that and that we don't have to have televisions or we don't have to have some of the other things. You know, we don't have to be a sports bar or we don't have to be like some labeled destination. We are what we are. We've got the beer that we make and we've got the place that's there and that's it.
Do you have a bar or a brewery that you kind of had in your mind's eye when you were making Sidetrack?
I think, you know, to anybody that appreciates going into bars or into anything, you know, my background as an architect, I think, kind of predisposed me to appreciate and to have a memory of places. So there are a lot of memories that I have and a lot of things that I wanted Sidetrack to be that beyond what it is now.
Yeah.
But certainly a lot of those favorite smaller places, intimate places where you just go to drink and talk to your friends, that, you know, I've been to a lot of those places. Mm-hmm. They're all the model for the pub that we've got.
So the place you have is very, like, it's, first of all, the atmosphere is amazing, by the way. I sat on the back table a couple days ago in the patio and just looked, and I just love the aesthetic of, like, the back area. Like, talking about architecture, I love the aesthetic. But it's a very personable place. Like, first of all, the people who work there become like you get to know them. They get to know you get to know them. You have a board wall where people can buy other people beers, and, you know, someone will walk in and they'll be like, oh, my name's on the board, someone bought me a beer.
That's still my gold standard. I know I will have locally made it in Albuquerque when I walk in one day.
It won't happen. I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
I think you might better look on the board. You might be surprised.
Oh yeah.
Well, now I gotta go again.
Yeah. Now you gotta go.
All right.
Never know. It always trips me out because, like, there's two up there for me and I'm like, who bought those? I mean, right. I have, like, no idea.
No idea.
Yeah,
that is the cool thing about that. That actually is, we can't take direct credit for that, but we saw that in another place that we follow that's in California. And we didn't even ask them. We just did it. We figured, you know, if we're 1,000 miles away, it's probably okay.
Yeah.
Just because it's someone else's doesn't mean it's not a good idea. No. I mean, it's great, you know?
And yeah. If you're listening in California, just plug your ears.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as being a personable place, some of that is a factor. You know, we really got lucky with this cool building that we've got. And it's a unique building, I think, for Albuquerque. It's made out of brick. And it's got these cool wood floors and these cool steel beams, and it's got a basement. You know, it's a lot of things that are just for, I'm from St. Louis, and it really reminds me.
Power North.
Yeah.
Hannibal.
Okay, right on. Well, it's funny that you come from there and you wind up here.
Yeah.
I have a question about the basement. Can I go look at it?
You've never been there?
Yeah. No. And I'm like, I want to go down in the basement and see what it's like.
Oh, we'll take you down anytime. Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. So here's an interesting question. We live in this city that has had quite the beer, you know, renaissance, 60 plus breweries, tap rooms, whatever not. How hard is it not to sit there and go, we should build a bigger place, we should expand, we should build a tap room on the west side? How hard is it not to do that?
It comes up a lot. You know, just to be honest, we don't quite make enough money to think about a lot of things like that. Our little place is good. And again, this is another thing. It's sort of, it is what it is. We don't have room to expand.
No.
And our brewery is sort of set where it is. And we have made some efforts to try and push a little bit to the west, but haven't had much luck being able to do that. It is something that we would like to try to do, but it's, you know, in our case, it's a little harder to make that happen.
Here's another question. And I mean, this really kind of like, I'm not trying to single out any, and I'm going to name names of other people. Like, there's definitely places that had like a really chill, cool factor, and they did that leap and built on and got bigger, and it changed everything. Mm-hmm. Do you have that fear?
We do. And one of the things that we've said, and it's sort of, again, because we sort of have to accept the size that we are, mm-hmm. but we've said, you know, we're going to take whatever resources we have, mm-hmm. and we're going to turn them back into this place. And instead of expanding, we're just going to make this better.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, we kind of doubled down on the little spot that we've got and the pub atmosphere. And every year we try and just, you know, make a little improvement inside. In 2019, we made a big investment back into the brewing equipment. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I was doing the brewing. 2019, we hired a real professional brewer. David Kimball's our brewer now. He and we worked on getting better equipment and making lots of improvements out there. So that's sort of how we do our expansion. Is it's more of an internal expansion of, you know, just making things better quality wise.
So I got to ask you both, you know, since this is a brewery, favorite beers from Sidetrack.
I really like the Mexican lager. Okay. I'm a lager person, and that's actually probably one of my favorites right now.
Yeah, David's done a great job of expanding our beer portfolio, but my favorite is and has been the pub ale. So that's just something that I kind of started out with, and I like that.
We just finished drinking that.
So I have a major question. This is really important. Uh-huh. When you go and make a cask, the Earl Grey tea with pub ale, are you just messing with me? Is that what you're doing, Titan?
I missed it.
Like what are you doing there, man? You know I love that beer. And I had like three of them.
Oh, you did get some good.
I drank them all. I got there the next day and they were gone.
It was gone, yeah. Yeah.
Dan's all, we'll just make a cask. That's it. And then he laughed evilly. Yeah. Because he knew.
Well, I will say with COVID times, it's been hard to really do cask and have it on right now. Because things have always been weird with numbers and and being shut down and all those things. And so we've really kind of, the cask has been more put off to the side.
Well, that's fine. I just want to know why you only made a cask of that.
But
that's my question. Why was there only?
We're not mad.
I was like, a cask?
I know. Sorry. We'll make more next time.
When you guys first put that out, I saw the social media post, a pub ale with Earl Grey tea, and I went, ew.
Yeah.
No. And then I went in, and they were like, do you want to try it? And I was like, sure. So I tried it, and I was like, whoa. And then I had one, and I was like, this could be one of it's honestly one of the best beers I've ever drank in my life.
It's, well, thank you.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And it is fun to experiment on things like that. there's a lot of crazy combinations that come out of different breweries. And our stuff has always tried to stay a lot more down to earth and a lot more centered on beer rather than how crazy we can get with it.
No, and that's a great point. Another question. I think we've asked some other brewers in town, but what does not go in beer that you've seen go in beer?
There's a lot of things that don't go in beer, and pastries is one of them.
I've had a beer with tobacco, and I don't know about that.
The weird one is like cereal. Like, I've had every one of them that I've had that it's like that they're like, oh, we did, you know, this with cereal, like Lucky Charms or, you know, blah, blah. Yeah. I always like them. And every time I hear it, I'm like, no.
Right.
Donuts, I agree. Red chili is one that I would throw out there. Mm-mm.
Well, it's
interesting.
I've had some nice red chili beer. And really, a lot of this, it all gets back to the brewer. And if you've got a skilled person that's coming up with these wild combinations and putting them together, you'll be surprised at how well some of them can turn out.
Yeah, I agree with that. They can. Yeah, some people can really pull it off, even with the weird ingredients.
Well, we are at about our halfway point, so we will take a quick break, and then we will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Chris here from What's Up ABQ. It's that time of the year, people are getting sick, you got the sniffles, somebody's coughing, you don't know what's going on. You're like, hey, I better make an appointment with my doctor. And you find out that could take quite some time. Well, I'm here to tell you about Southwest Labs. They make medical testing easy and simple. You can skip the hassle of making an appointment with your doctor. They offer a variety of tests, including STD testing, prostate screening, diabetes, and hey, they have that all-important COVID-19 test. Simply choose your test, get tested, get the results, and you can even get a doctor's interpretation virtually. Southwest Labs has locations in Albuquerque and Las Cruces. Just call 505-609-LABS or visit southwestlab.com. So hey, if you want to get lab results and you don't want to wait, southwestlab.com.
Hello, hello. My name is Deech, and I'm the host of Fairy Tales, Fables, and Fails, your one-stop shop for delightful rundowns of your favorite fairy tale classics, and many you've never heard of before. So if you want your favorite childhood movies ruined for you in the most amusing way possible, come give a listen.
And we're back. And today, we have the co-owners of Sidetrack with us. Go ahead and reintroduce yourselves.
I'm Anna O'Neill.
And Dan Herr.
So we've been talking about beer this whole thing. So Dan, you, I would say, are maybe not an anomaly, but you are in the world I've seen. So you came to the world of brewing, you started brewing at home. Like when you guys first opened, how, like, whenever people would hear about that, was that looked upon? Because, like, we have such a brewing scene where there's, you know, people, they study under other people and they go out on their own, whatever. Was that a thing where people kind of at first were like, I don't know about that?
I don't know. I will say that the brewing community has been very kind and very welcoming to us from the very beginning. I was really intimidated by what you're talking about because I hadn't cut my chops anywhere except doing my own thing. And I was pretty nervous about how it was going to go over. I know that the beers that we started out with were not any medal-winning beers, but I do think we made a solid effort and we had a good foundation to start from and to build on.
I heard the word. I'll be honest. Like, before I went, like, I was like, what's the word on this place? And I asked around and people were like, well, the guy threw a home. And I went, oh, that, you know, okay. Dan Mayfield and my friend Kevin were there and they posted you guys were open. And so we went over and boom, you got me. You may not think you did, but you had it from day one, man. I don't care what this guy learned. He knows how to brew beer.
Chris, what got you to keep coming back?
The beer.
Okay, no, that's a good answer.
I walked in and I had that pub ale. I was like, oh, man. And, you know, I'll be real honest here. So I'm a big, like, neighborhood guy. And you guys were in our neighborhood. You guys were the place. The look was amazing. The beer was awesome. And it was like I walked in and I was like, oh, this, like, it has, like, the atmosphere is such a calming atmosphere. It's such a nice, there's no TVs, there's no, you can go and chill. And the beer is not, it's great for people who are beer connoisseurs and people who are newbies.
Yeah.
All the same. So you can take someone new, you can walk in the door and they'll like something.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that was a lot of the feedback we got, especially at the beginning, because like when Dan was first brewing, the IPAs weren't over the top. They weren't like these big, you know, we weren't like pulling people in because of, you know, the people who are really like IPA lovers, but it was a lot of people who maybe were drinking Coors Light and then they had one of our IPAs and they were like, oh, you know, I can get into IPAs. So I think we're able to help people just because our beers weren't over the top.
Well, I don't drink one of your beers and it burns my nostrils as I inhale.
Yeah, and so I think we were able to, you know,
Well, it's all keeping with the pub idea too. It's we're just trying to make a place that is enjoyable to be in, and we've got good beer that you can drink and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, you know, again, I'm more of a dark beer guy because I'm, you know, from Portland. Don't shake your head at me. and you guys always have a good dark beer on tap, you know. Yeah. But something that I want to know, and I've asked around about this, but I want to hear what you guys think. What is it about Albuquerque and IPAs?
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. It drives me crazy, though.
I have a pretty good idea.
Okay.
So it's one of those things. First of all, like, it's not Albuquerque. It's other places, too. I went and visited my friends in Bellingham, Washington one time, and their beer scene was like 2 years old. And every beer, like, we went to this brewery, and they're like, yeah, this brewery just opened. Let's go to the opening. And I was like, okay. And we go, and they have 9 beers on tap. They had, like, a lager. They had, like, a red. They had, like, a IPA. Mm-hmm. They had a Pilsner. And every beer was hoppy. Every beer tasted identical. And I feel like a lot of that is like, you just go through that growing pain. Because, I mean, like, I've never brewed beer, but Dan, you can explain this to me. I feel like people can hide a lot of mistakes with hops.
That is one thing about an IPA sort of in general. And of course, you know, again, a skilled brewer can do lots of things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's not a lot of room to hide in a Pilsner.
Well, but if your Pilsner's hoppy, then...
Yeah, hops are sort of, yeah, this whole other layer of flavor and aroma that can cover up some flaws or cover up some things.
Yeah.
And you can blame a lot of things on hops, too. You can blame haze on hops, and you can blame different flavors on hops. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's right, but...
And then I think here's what happened. Like, it's also kind of a macho thing. There's a little bit of a macho-ness to it. But then, like, it's like, oh, man, I want the triple hopped, blah, blah, blah. And then I feel like people start to, like, finally, like, develop. I feel like a lot of breweries, though, now are, like, they're really making good IPAs. For example, I thought your IPA right away. I preferred your IPA over a lot of people's because, like, the hoppiness wasn't the character. It was like, here's the beer, and then you'll taste the hops. But it's not just going to burn your nose out, and you know, like the hot sauces. Like, let's make the hottest hot sauce,
right, or
the hot sauce that's kind of spicy but tastes really good. And so I feel like a lot of breweries are finally getting that down, and you're starting to see a lot of IPAs now in Albuquerque that are actually very flavorful. You taste other flavors besides hoppiness, you know, like the hops. And so I think it's just kind of one of those, like, like when a city gets beer, like craft beer, they like, everybody's like, oh, you got to have the most hoppy beer possible. And it's, I don't get it either.
See, I'm all about, you know, if it's bready, it's dark, it's rich, like bring on the Russian Imperials and the British Imperials and the stouts.
Beer in a glass?
Yeah.
Or like bread in a glass, sorry.
Yeah.
Bread.
That's my jam. And because I'm not a big fan of the hops. And so in a town where everywhere you go, there's hops, I'm really appreciative that you guys always have a decent dark beer on tap.
I should have sent you a Doppelbock. I forgot to throw that in the box.
That Bock is good. That Bock I've had. So I got that on the first day, and I've had it several times since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever we go, you tend to order that, Chris.
I like that Bock. It's just, you know, that alcohol content's a little high for me. COVID has plagued my tolerance. So,
but, right. I usually get your stout because I don't mind the high alcohol content because – the brewery I went to back in Missouri was always like 8%, 10%, 12%, you know, those lower house too.
Really big fan of that El Camino lager.
So again, a lot of this is attributed to David. It sort of goes with our theme of just making drinkable beers. And we're talking sort of a little bit about high alcohol beers. We will occasionally kick something out that's above 7% or that's there, but you know, we try and stay in, again, this, I keep saying this word, but it's what it is, but just a drinkable range of 5%. The pub ale is 3.8.
Important question. Serious question.
Big one.
Big one. The one I always ask everybody on the show. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two-part question, answer from each of you. First off, red or green?
Oh, green.
Red.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. And then again, each of you, somewhere in town for good red or green chili, not a relative's house, where do you go?
El Patio.
Okay.
Oh. All right. That's a good answer. That's
I gotta say that I don't get out much, so yeah. I'm not sure what the state of El Patio is, but that's my memory of the best.
Wow.
Yeah.
Come on, Anne.
Come on, Anne, get on it.
Come on.
I don't know. Let me think about it. I don't have an answer.
Oh, I know what I was gonna ask, Dan.
What's that?
So you guys made the Buzz Bomb beer. And yeah. When it first came out, I was like, I don't like beers with coffee in it. And that beer changed that for me. What was the idea behind that? What is it? And what was the idea behind it?
I don't like beers with coffee in them either, yeah. But I like Buzz Bomb. And, yeah. And that was the idea behind it. Well, for one thing, we're neighbors with a coffee shop. And we wanted to make something that, you know, you are always trying to look for something to distinguish you from the rest of the crowd.
Right.
For us, we have these sort of, you know, not very flashy beers, but those not very flashy beers are what our core lineup are. So this was a chance for us to sort of experiment and to find something that, you know, that just made sense for our place.
And I would say also, you know, when we typically find coffee in a beer, it's like a stout or something like that.
So order.
Yeah. This was really because it's not a stout.
Yeah, it's a pale ale. So it's a moderately hopped amber beer, British ale yeast in our case.
Yeah.
And then we experimented with some not overbearing coffee flavors. So we settled on this Ethiopian blend, and it's a cold brew concentrate that the people that make some of the products for Zendo make for us. So we get this repeatable concentrated cold brew coffee and then add that on the backside to a finished beer.
Now my next question is, when it comes out, will it just be a cask or will it be a lot of beer?
Asking.
Well, I'm actually going to tell you, it's coming out this week.
I heard.
A little bit more than a cask.
Just I'm going to have to go fight people on a first Friday to get in the door to get a drink of it.
So all our beers are sort of constantly evolving. We don't really have anything that's the same thing every time. We have sort of settled on, you know, pub ale is really pretty close every time. And
yeah.
We've kind of gotten into an IPA and a Mexican lager we have all the time. But this round of Buzz Bomb is going to be something that we're going to have to kind of tinker around with because it's going to be based on pub ale. It's going to be on a lighter beer. And so we're going to have to make some adjustments to the ratio of coffee and just try and hit that balance.
I will say is quite a challenge when you're tasting beer and really concentrated coffee. Mm-hmm. And you're just like going zoom in your hands because you're tasting all these combinations.
That's for the name.
And it's fun.
So as of today, at the time of this recording, Chris had it on his social media earlier. I'm sure you guys heard it. New Mexico, was it House?
The House 255 bill?
That's correct.
It's passed the House, it's passed the Senate, and it's going to the governor's desk.
Correct.
How do you guys feel about that bill? I mean, there's a lot in it.
There's a lot in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Like for ourselves, for Sidetrack, I think we just don't have to process it all.
Yeah. I actually got called by an alcohol distributor earlier about it. Like they called because I posted that and they called me to like ask if I knew everything that was going on. So do you want me to kind of lay it out like what's going on?
Oh yeah, you can for the listeners, yes.
Okay.
We're familiar with the bill.
The bill is there will be alcohol delivery allowed in the state of New Mexico for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. It's a plan, is it called Plan B? It's like bolt on or whatever, something like that.
Be able to serve liquor, basically.
Restaurants will basically be able to pay like $3,400 a year for a liquor license. They'll mm-hmm. still have the same stipulations that of a beer and wine license, where they'll still have to have so much of their sales will have to be food, but they'll be able to have liquor, which is devaluing all the liquor licenses that are currently available as we speak. There's a couple of additions that were thrown in at the last minute that are kind of really odd. And I've heard, so the rumor is, don't know if this is fact or not, that the governor doesn't like them and that she will not accept them and write them out of the bill. But one of them is they will outlaw mini bottles in like the little minis. It'll outlaw those in the state of New Mexico completely.
That's right.
And the other stipulation that she does not like is that in McKinley County, they will no longer be selling hard liquor at convenience stores, which is a very odd thing. Like you're like, well, for most people who live in New Mexico, like if you live in certain areas, you don't understand, but that's a highly Native American indigenous area. That's kind of a controversial one, but rumor has it she may not do those. She might cut those out.
Yeah, I haven't heard much of the gossip on it, but we have been paying close attention to this bill back since the session started, and it's been a real roller coaster as to all the things that have been pushed and pulled and added and taken out. And
so if it goes through, will you guys be delivering beer to the neighborhood?
Only to your house, Chris. Only to your house.
Hey, I'm in the neighborhood.
Brian, we can take care of you.
Thank you.
I bought a house in the neighborhood, so.
That's true. I know. Yeah, so I will just say one of the other things is that got added is so they created this reciprocity. So now breweries could sell New Mexico hard liquor, spirits and things like that. Whereas, you know, like the distillers could sell. So now everybody can sell everybody's product, New Mexico product.
Which is fine.
So good, bad. It is. Yeah.
I don't think that is bad. Like, okay. So one of the biggest issues I've ever had with like, you know, say you like it's after work, like pre-COVID times, it's after work and you're like, hey, let's all go for a drink. It's hard to do a brewery because not everyone drinks beer.
Yeah.
Like you guys might have like hollow spirits, like some rum and some whatever, and you might mix it, you know, I don't know. You guys may or may not do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you still a member of the Brewers Guild?
My term ended. Dan is actually now a member of the board.
Who it? Dan is?
Dan is. guy sitting next to me.
So then, Dan, you're very much up on the law, right? Because the Brewers Guild is like, they stay pretty active in the politics of the beer industry, correct?
Well, yeah, we have a legislative committee, in fact, and we try and track all this stuff and get as much, you know, not that we have much influence or any influence, but we try and comment on things as they're happening to the ability that we can. This session, because of COVID, has just been really difficult to get anything in. The most remarkable thing about this bill is, well, for one thing, it is a remarkable bill in that it really does change the landscape of New Mexico liquor laws for the past 40 years. And now in July 1st, it's going to be a different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm 46. And in my lifetime, like I grew up in eastern New Mexico and I saw the antiquated laws there. I remember when in New Mexico, all liquor sales were not allowed on Sunday whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember when they changed that law in Curry County and Roosevelt County, where I went to college, because I grew up in Curry County and then I went to college in Roosevelt County, which are neighboring counties. We had alcohol sales on Sunday for 2 weeks, and then they waited till the university went on summer break and they had a special session and they voted it out, went against the state's order and voted it out. So then we no longer had alcohol sales on Sunday again. You now have in Curry County, at least, I think you can buy, you can go to a bar on Sundays, but you still can't buy package.
Huh.
So then also in Roosevelt County in Curry County, well, because of the antiquated liquor laws, so a lot of people don't know about the liquor laws here. So each county only has so many liquor license class. Is it class one? Liquor license?
I think that's the term, but yeah, that's basically an unlimited, you can sell anything you want to anytime.
Right. So only every county only has so many, and there are actually churches that own, like in Curry and Roosevelt County, the churches that own liquor licenses so that they cannot be bought. And so when you would go to buy, like when you would go to apply for a liquor license, if there was one available, which there aren't, they would be like $200,000 to $250,000 around that area. So since there aren't any, then you'd go to buy one from someone who already has one, and then they would sell it to you for like $1 million. Right. Yeah, like literally, like, you know, I'm not exaggerating. And so now, after 40 years of that, you have like where you can go pay $3,400 a year to have a liquor license. And, you know, the people who own those most expensive ones have to be just livid. I mean, they have to be livid.
I can't imagine what sort of issues are going to come up because of that. But I would not be surprised to see some people, you know, making a stink about it.
Yeah.
And this is just, you know, again, you've brought this up before on your podcast, Tendrick Minimum, Chris. Yeah. And I just found it fascinating because, again, living in the Midwest for 10 years, every bar I went to, whether it was, you know, craft or, you know, whatever, it was both. You'd have beer and liquor there. You'd have except for mead, because they had to have a wine license, and that was harder to get in Missouri.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. It's, everybody's got their own battles to fight. But yeah. And so, like, again, I'm used to being able to go to a bar and getting, except for wine and mead, any drink I want.
And I like the person I talked to, I can't mention their name. They were talking about how, like, there's bar owners who have, like, mortgages on their liquor license because they were just so valuable. And now they're just going to drop. The only thing I can equate it to is, like, in New York City, taxi cab medallion was worth, like, you know, $500,000. And people would, like, mortgage their house to, like, get one. Because if you had a taxi cab medallion, you were golden. You were going to have constant work. And it was like, you know, you could retire on that job and it was good money. And then Uber and Lyft came in.
I was going to say, and then Uber and Lyft changed the game. Yeah.
Changed the game. And so this is the game changer. And I mean, like, these people are probably going to, like, complain, but the state's looking at it as, we sold you this liquor license once, but then we get no other income. Yep. Whereas this, they're going to get income every year. I guarantee that's why they're doing it. I mean,
well, yeah, that, I mean, what you were talking about with licenses being so expensive, that wasn't under the state's direction. That just kind of spun out of control from something that they were, you know, that they were trying.
I know during the first half of the interview here, Chris had talked about you guys expanding or, you know, whatever. Have you guys thought of ever doing a second location?
Yeah, we have.
Hey, I just got to say this because right now I live way in the South Valley. Mm-hmm. There is no craft local brewery down there. I'm just telling you, please do me a favor.
You guys can build a tap room on 8th Street across from me.
We're down near Parajito off of the
side. I have a building.
In the park?
There's nothing down there. I, the closest thing is Nexus. Like, I got to drive, like, up the Broadway to get anywhere.
That is something that we've heard from various people that, and that would be sort of a natural extension, I think, for us. But, we've always got something that we're working on.
Nice.
Like I'm saying, I have a podcast studio I'm building behind my house. Gosh. It needs a tap system, and we could all just hang out.
Chris just there. Wants a private brewery access.
Yes.
Yeah.
To sidetrack. Pipe it in. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're getting near the end of our show. You guys have started as home brewers. You've come to be a downtown community staple, which is awesome. You guys have a great community. You grow great beer.
Yeah.
But you started somewhere. You started from, I wouldn't say the bottom, but, you know, from your own, you know, whimsy, creativity. What would you say to somebody who's listening right now, who's kind of messing around with home brewing, maybe has a secret dream about maybe opening a brewery, whether it's in New Mexico or somewhere else? What would you tell them?
Well, you've got to recognize that beer is definitely a fundamental part of the equation, but it's not the only thing. You've got to take in all these other factors of marketability and business planning and just all the other factors that go into running a small business, because that's what you're doing. But, you know, if you've got a passion, follow it, you know, see what happens.
I think you said it the best, though. You know, like, I would say with a home brewer, like, I don't have this business, but what I would say is, just because you like it doesn't mean everybody else is going to like it. And you said it the best, make a drinkable beer.
Yeah, to just spend a second on that, if you're going to try and sell your beer and you want to be honest about it, go out and get some honest opinions about it and find somebody that doesn't like it and have them tell you why they don't like it. But, you know, get your feelings hurt over why your beer isn't as good as you think it is.
I recently had a, so, like, you know, there's all the seltzer craze. We didn't even get into that.
Oh, yeah.
I like them because, like, you know, I like beer, but I like seltzer too. Like, I have, you know, I'm not a snob on it. A lot of people are snob on it.
I don't know about that.
I'm a snob about a lot of things, but I'm not a snob on that. So anyway, I bought this 12 pack of, like, a seltzer from Texas. First two were fine. They did everything like a seltzer should. And the third one, like, I was talking to Ryan while I was drinking it, and I took a drink. I was like, yeah, anyway, oh. And it smelled like Fritos that were soaked in dirty water. And it tasted real bad. Why would someone put this out in the world? Like, was there no one along the way? And I drank it. I had my girlfriend drink it. I gave one to a friend of mine, and I said, and his girlfriend, and everyone said the same, that it was disgusting.
Yeah, didn't you on your recent episode? You called it the Malorts of seltzers.
Yes. Have you guys ever had Malort before?
No, I don't think I have.
You're in for a treat.
Oh, we'll have to. I have a bottle.
Okay. I think you've talked about it on your other podcast.
Yeah. In Chicago, you can't get it here, but I have a bottle.
Okay.
I guess never say never, but don't look for seltzer at Sidetrack anytime soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Dan, right. I said seltzer. Right. Dan got up and walked away.
No, and that's great. So again, at Mark Twain Brewery in Hannibal, I made friends with the head brewer there because I was there all thing, you know, at least once a week, and I was like, so when is your pumpkin ale coming out or whatever? And she's like, it's not. I was like, what? What do you mean? She's like, okay, I used to work for I forget which brewery down in St. Louis. It was one of the craft breweries, and she said I had one rule when I came and got hired here. Up at Mark Twain Brewery, and I never have to make a pumpkin ale again because I've made so many of them.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you'll find a pumpkin beer at Sidetrack either, ever. Like Dan said, I will never say never, but...
Right,
No pumpkin latte?
Maybe we'll do a pumpkin spiced buzz bomb.
Dan's throwing up
horror upon horror.
He's already gone. He's off the room.
Well, you guys, thanks so much for being on. Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
No, well, thanks for having us. This was really fun, and we really appreciate it. And sorry, Ryan, I didn't mean to blow you off.
I'm still going to come.
No, we're just, you know, like Dan said, we just kind of keep chugging along. This last year has been hard. But, you know, we're just going to keep making improvements. Hopefully maybe you'll see some soon coming around out on the patio.
And I was going to say the last thing here is if you don't live in the downtown area, where is Sidetrack Brewing?
Oh, we're on 2nd Street between Lead and Coal downtown.
Right across from the Turquoise Museum.
Right across from the Turquoise Museum, exactly.
Zachary House.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And Ryan, make sure to check our friend board.
Yeah. I will. Now I'm like, oh, I have to go in there.
Yeah, I have to go down there.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Take care.
You guys have a good one.
What's Up ABQ is proud to be sponsored by Daisy Sticker Company, fun stickers and affordable prices. Do you want your business, group, or team on a decal, cup, pop socket, or business card? Just contact Daisy Sticker on Instagram at Daisy Sticker Co. and now find them on Etsy at Daisy Sticker Co. 1. They'll print your artwork or design custom-made artwork for you. Add the promo code PODCAST for 10% off your purchase. Daisy Sticker Company, cool stickers and cool prices. Look for them on Instagram at Daisy Sticker Co. and now on Etsy at Daisy Sticker Co. 1. They help bring you What's Up ABQ.
Hello, my name is Brennan.
And my name is Jesse.
And we've been brothers our whole lives.
We also host a podcast called Dad, I Have to Pee.
Every Friday, we discuss parenting and punk rock with a special guest.
We also answer your listener questions and impart our questionable wisdom.
Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other places.
We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dad, I Have to Pee.
This podcast is a member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild, and we can advertise your business or organization. Get more info by contacting us at info@borellispodcastersguild.com and visit our website at borellispodcastersguild.com.
So, Chris, what are we going to talk about for season 3 of What's Up ABQ?
Well, Ryan, you see that guy screaming on the bus? Find out on the show.
Ooh, I love that guy. Or how about a real live alien?
Ooh, that's cool. How about a dairy farmer?
How about a talking chili?
How about a fireman?
Ooh, how about just 2 hours of beer pouring into a can?
A statue.
A streetcar.
An art bus.
Several art buses.
Catch the next episode of What's Up ABQ, Season 3.
What's Up ABQ is a proud member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild.